pase. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, May 28th, 2018. First of all, happy birthday to Vincent Destouches, color commentator for the Impact game on TVS Pod. Dwayne, you know what? Vincent has a really nice birthday. Really nice day of birth because, well, it was my birthday too.
I was going to say, is there not another birthday we should wish everyone a happy birthday for, or have everyone give the chance to wish you a happy birthday now? Was it today or was it yesterday?
It was yesterday. It's weird because my birthday always falls on for auto racing fans out there. And I know people are missing my voice on Formula One, Scuderia F1. I don't have time right now. After the World Cup, I'll be back talking F1 for sure. But yesterday was like three big races. So on my birthday, there's usually a lot of sports. And this weekend, it was the same. But on Saturday, one game made the headlines around the world. The real Super Bowl of soccer, or should we say the Super Bowl, is the Champions League final of football. It was Saturday. Yeah, what a game, Dwayne. Zinedine Zidane and Real Madrid for the third straight year Champions League final winner.
Yeah, and this one I think was the most entertaining of all. I don't know if it was the best game of all. I think probably the first one, the one where they scored in stoppage time to take it away, to grab it away from their crosstown rivals, had a lot more sort of class and quality to the game. But the game on Saturday was just a rocking good time from up top to bottom, unless you were like had a team in the race. A Liverpool fan probably didn't have a lot of fun, but it was a lot of fun as a neutral to watch.
You saw them in the stands. They were nervous, scared. When Mo Salah got injured, the reaction of the fans in the stands were, yeah, they knew. They're like, oh, man, our best player is out now. He's getting subbed off. This is not going to go well. They have a great team. They have Bale on the bench. What a decision.
Yeah,
what a decision. You know, we talk about Zinedine Zidane in 2006 when he had butted Materazzi. You know, when you're in a World Cup final and you just have to do something, take some balls. And guess what? Zidane's got some balls. I'm going to keep the same 11 as last year's final. I'll put Bale on the bench. I know he's not happy that he's not playing that much. I'm going to sub him in, and he's going to change the entire complexity of this game and score maybe the nicest goal you'll ever see in your life.
Well, look, the only other goal in a Champions League final that's even remotely comparable to that goal is the goal that the manager that put him in scored back in 94, I believe it was, back then anyway. Just type in, if you're not familiar, if you're new to the game, that's okay. If you're new to the game, type in Zidane Champions League final goal and it will be all over. It's a similar kind of volley from around the same place that, Bale's is overhead. But this is, so you can debate it one way or the other, but what a goal to end a European. I know there was another goal in the game from Bale as well, but that was essentially was the winning goal for the entire season. So I choose to believe that that was how the European season ended, with that overhead kick goal, and what a goal it was. Maybe the greatest goal in Champions League history, one of the greatest goals. I think the best goal of this decade. Yeah. I'll go that far right now the top. Anyone want to give me a better one, tweet them at me, sure. But, I mean, in terms of context and quality, that's right up there. I mean, you could maybe say that the Rooney overhead against City in the derby would be the one that people would think of a lot.
But it's not a final. Like, there's something about a final, a Champions League final, where you're being able to score a goal you never scored. And the interesting part is when you hear Gareth Bale in the press conference after describing the goal, saying, this is a dream come true for me. I've never scored overhead or bicycle kick. And by the way, people are wondering, is this an overhead? Is this a bicycle kick? Well, according to a few experts on social media, this was a bicycle kick, Dwayne, because there was a bicycling motion. There was the left knee that went up before the right leg came back up and hit the ball, or vice versa. But there was a motion of bicycling, and usually that's the difference between a bicycle and an overhead kick.
getting a little pedantic when you get into that one, but sure, if you want to get tactical about it, yeah, it was just a brilliant goal, and it brought me to my knees. I'm not being facetious when I say that. I watched this game at the Dog and Bear, which is a somewhat famous soccer bar on Queen Street West in Toronto. I got there at 1 o'clock, thinking that I had given myself lots of time. It was already standing room only. People were already singing. It was predominantly probably 85% Liverpool fans. So I was stuck in a corner with the friend that was there to watch. And then when it happened, I literally dropped to my knees, because it was just the most skillful and surreal goal I'll ever see in a Champions League final. I also dropped to my knees on two other occasions in this game, not for skillful reasons, though, for what did I just see reasons. And that's what makes this game to me, like, again, if you're a Liverpool fan, it's terrible, because you have this amazing moment of, like, shock quality that goes in, and you also have I do know which one's worse. The first goal is inexcusable. The second goal is a mistake that can happen, I think, and it's not, you know, excusable at that level, but I understand it, at least. I physically understand how sometimes as a keeper you might have your strength or your concentration, you're looking the other way, something happens and the ball goes through your hands. Like, that can happen. First goal doesn't make sense to me. Why? He had another option to his left. He had so many other options than what he did there.
He wasn't expecting Benzema to just put his leg like that. I don't know. When you see Karius just like, you see Benzema turning away and start to walk away, but he's like 2 feet away, and he just extends his right leg, and he's at the exact right spot, and hits the ball, and just trickles slowly into the net. And it was like, what? It's a good goal. It's a good goal. And the announcers and commentators are going crazy. Karius looking at the ref like, what? That counts? I wasn't ready. I was not ready. But guess what? It still counts. And it was 1-0.
Not to compare myself to that, but like, as I played a little bit up top when I played men's when I was young, only because I was faster than all the other old men that I was playing with, pretty much. They put me up top for some reason, even though, you know, I'm not really much of a scorer. But I scored a goal once, not like that, but I was just standing there, and on a goal kick, they blasted it off. Like, it hit me in the chest, fell down at an open net, and I tapped it in. It's a similar, those goals can happen, but they happen at levels like I just described. They don't happen at that level. Yeah. The only other thing that I can compare to is you occasionally see one where a forward will be behind the goalie who puts it down on the ground, and he runs around and kicks it in. I've seen that a couple times, but that's at least he's like out of the keeper's vision, right?
He's hiding, yeah, but... You know, we don't give Benzema enough credit, I think. It's not the first time
he closed fast. He closed well.
Yeah, and it's not the first time we see Benzema do that. And Benzema, if you look at the game itself, it's not the only time he puts Karius under pressure. Every time Karius is close to the ball, either Benzema's running towards him or at him or next to him. And I think it's one of the plays that Benzema does that we don't give him credit enough. It's putting either the keeper when he's in that situation, or the free kick taker, or the guy who's going to put the ball in, put some pressure. Do not give an easy pass. Do not even give one free pass to your teammates. Pressure, constant pressing by Benzema. We would call it forecheck. We call it, he's the first defenders for Real Madrid, and the way he's pressing, it really shows, creates turnovers. Look at the goals we've seen created off turnovers in the midfield because of Benzema's pressing. Bad pass, ball gets turned over. Madrid gets the ball. We see another attack. It's crazy, all those little details that Real Madrid does, and we'll talk about Ramos because those are not little details. That's something different. But when you look at Benzema's play, that little pressure that he always puts on the ball carrier, or you look at Bale coming off the bench, and yes, knowing that he's not necessarily going to be there next year, he wants to play every game, but taking advantage of what he's given. He's like, okay, I've got 30 minutes to play here. I'm going to score 2 goals. Why not? I got the opportunity. Those little details, you know, team sacrifice, and when I mean sacrifice, I'm not necessarily saying Ramos sacrificing Salah's body, but I'm saying the collective is more important than the individual in the small little details. And I was impressed once again by Madrid for the third straight year. And seeing them play live in Chicago last year, there's something about this vintage Madrid team.
Oh, for sure. And look, you mentioned the closing. There's a great irony to this. Well, maybe a minor irony to this, because it's not that, that Real Madrid doesn't do similar things, but Liverpool's entire play is based on that sort of aggressive closing down, get the ball back as soon as they lose it as quickly as possible. So for them to, you know, lose the Champions League final partly because the player closed so quickly and closed unexpectedly on them and you know, got the ball back quickly is somewhat ironic, because that is exactly the game plan that Liverpool wanted to do. And it is, you know, the modern evolution of tactics right now is that close fast, that play 1,000 miles per hour. And you know, it's an indication of how athletic these athletes are right now, right, in terms of their ability to do that. Even in Zidane's era, which is not that long ago, I don't think you saw the ability of players to be as on their front foot, to close, to be as fast as they are nowadays. And that was, you know, as bad as the keeping error was, and it was a terrible keeping error. There is an element of skill involved in terms of the ability to just constantly be on the front foot, constantly looking to get the ball over as soon as you lose it, which again, you know, has been the reaction to tiki-taka was this move to pressing, high press, constant sort of play. That's the reaction, and that was the ultimate sort of presentation to it in many ways. Not the most skillful illustration of it, but it's the ultimate illustration, because how, you know, the keeper has the ball and you take it from the keeper and score. That's, you know, the ultimate expression of that idea, right?
Yeah, it is. And it was, for me too, an expression of Zidane's ability as a man manager, not just tactics. And yeah, we talk about Real Madrid's team. There's 18 names. You can put them in a hat, shuffle, throw them on a piece of paper, and be like, okay, that works. That's 11 guys. Those are good world class, and you can win that way. But for me, is how low-key Zidane is as a manager. You don't hear him say crazy guarantees or controversy. No. He does a little thing. Puts his team together, lets him play, keeps them accountable, but they're allowed to make mistakes. We've seen Marcelo makes a bunch of mistakes all the time, but he's still being trusted with his position, and it creates amazing time. Marcelo may be the best left back in the entire world, and it's how you give them confidence by making play that flair that we always talk about when we talk about those big attacking teams. For me, it's a bit of the extension of Zidane as a head coach, as a manager. Look at how confident just look how confident this team is. Even when they make a mistake, even when they concede a goal, even when they don't execute a pass, they don't talk about it for 3 weeks in the media and give people criticism and say, this guy's not a good coach enough. Oh, he's a terrible coach. Oh, them European coaches. No. Yes, that was a little dig at Montreal media. But it's more, look, they're going to make mistakes, but when they don't, we're the best in the world. And it's kind of fun. I don't know if I should call it positive managing of a team, but I'm going to call it that. It is a positive way to manage your team in my mind.
No, look, we've talked about Zidane before on this show, obviously. I mean, you can't. He's the best player of the last 20 years. Well, other than Messi and Ronaldo, but yeah, they're 1, 2, 3 there. I mean, he's the only player from the last 20, 25 years that I think you'd put in that same level, right? A lot of our listeners might be a little bit new to the game and don't totally remember the height of his brilliance, but he was pretty brilliant. And that's, I think, key to why he's successful in managing Real Madrid. Zidane might be the only man in the world that can manage Real Madrid right now effectively. And you look at the managers that came just before him, were not able to match the level of success that he's had with them. And I think that's partly because when you have that level of skill on a club, you really just need someone that can manage from a position of power in the way that Zidane can. No one else could stand there and go, I'm better than you, all of you, you know that I am, right?
That's true.
Like, Ronaldo is the only guy that would have an argument with them, and
like, but okay, fine, Cristiano, fine, you can go for a walk, but the rest of you, I'm better than you guys.
Yeah, and look, I'll you know, conversely, we don't know, but it seems that I don't think Zidane would be as successful at a club that needs more direction, more tactics, more whatever, right? Because that's just not his skill. Like, he's just this presence. And he's perfect for that. I mean, he could manage, you know, he could manage a Barcelona too, except of course he wouldn't because of the rivalry.
Yeah, he would manage, never, you, but he could.
Yeah, Byron or something like that maybe. But yeah, he reflects that club in such a way. Like, you know, Diego Simeone is not going to come to Real Madrid and do anything. They're going to revolt within a day. that's not going to work, right? So he is perfect for this club.
For me, there's the aspect too of the level of the players, the level of the awareness, the soccer IQ of those 18 players is what? The best in the world? Like, you have the best players in the world, basically. When you're around Madrid, you have the best of the best at every position, basically. So the awareness, the tactical and soccer IQ awareness of those players are second to none. So if you're Zinedine Zidane, you're the coach, you're like, okay. In my ideal mind, I would like to do this formation with this type of tactics, with this type of pressure, blah, blah, blah. And this is the formation that I would like to play against these guys. Guys, can we play this? No problem. All right, perfect. So it's pretty much how, in my mind, tactical meetings go for Madrid. Zidane's like, okay, guys, today we're going to do this, this, and this. You guys play there, you play there, you're good there. Sure, that works. And then you just change your formation, keep the same players, give them a different task. The players are at our level of their understanding of their positioning, of everything to a level that is almost unmatched in the entire planet. So you mentioned tactically, he doesn't have a lot to do. True. But it's even easier, whatever he needs to do, because everyone else understands. So he just puts on a piece of paper, shares it with them, and they get it. So there's something to that, too. The soccer IQ at those type of clubs is impressive.
Yeah. Madrid is the center of the soccer universe right now for a lot of different reasons. But the biggest reason of all is just this incredible historical collection of talent. This is, the one, I think, among the greatest 10 teams anyway, because there's been a lot of teams in the world, in the history of the world. So it's hard to narrow down and get to, you know, especially during the time, to get too exacting on where they'd rank. But this is a team that's going to be considered amongst the greatest of all time. Three Champions Leagues in a row in the modern era. It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. We should talk a little bit about Liverpool, the losers in this. Is it a different game? And they were the better team for the first 10 minutes of this game. And that, I think, was by design that they went out hell-bent.
It was by design. It's for Madrid wanted to exert them a bit. You're like, okay, you run a bit, you exert yourself, and then you're going to start running after us, and we'll give you possession for a bit so you can... But yeah, that's what it was about. He's like, okay, we'll give him a false sense of confidence, and it's a trap. It's a trap, basically.
Yeah, and well, they came close to getting a couple in that time, too. I think that maybe it might have been by design, but I do think that maybe, you know, about 7 minutes of that game, Madrid went, okay, well, we got to rein this in a little bit because they're getting too close. And obviously, we should probably talk about the injuries now.
Yeah, Ramos. So, was it on purpose? Did Ramos arm drag Salah to the ground and dislocate his shoulder? Or was it just an accident of two guys playing soccer, fighting for a ball, and not knowing what to do with their arms?
Yes.
that answers it. Yes.
Who knows? You're not inside his head. I'm not a complete cynic when it comes to that. I tend to give them a bit of the benefit of the doubt, especially if this was like a group stage game, maybe I think Ramos is a little bit more deliberate in what he's doing there. But I think in a Champions League final that there is a level of intensity that cannot be understood by mortals such as ourselves that allows for things like that. But there are injuries that happen in these games all the time, and it's almost – because of the speed and the intensity that these games are played at, they're almost inevitable, unfortunately, because the human body can only get pushed so far.
And no one wants to give an inch, right? Every single inch of that field is fought for, and you're willing to put your body in between. You're willing to literally sacrifice your body parts. Like, no, you're not going to get the ball. Let me put his arms in. No, wait, what are you doing? My elbow, my shoulder. Exactly. So that's how it happens.
Yeah, and look, the fact that he got back on the pitch for those 3 minutes, like the next time someone talks about soccer players being soft, clip that and show him going back out. He dislocated his shoulder. There was no doubt about that. And I dislocated my shoulder in high school. I still have problems with it years later. So I can't even comprehend the pain that he must have been in, and obviously he had to come off. And then I thought to myself, you know, Real Madrid, you got to be lucky to be good too, right? And think about two of their championships. They've had the best scorer on the opposition team, the talisman on the opposition team, get injured. And I mean, with Costa and Atleti, the injury was known going in. But, you know, he did start that game. They were forced into a change about the same time into that. Then obviously this happens here as well. So this, you know, and this one, it was such a sad injury too, because you had to feel both for Liverpool, also for Egypt, which is something we'll probably, that's going to be the only thing people are going to be talking about now for the next 2 weeks, is what his status is for the World Cup. And so maybe we won't focus too much on that right now, because we're going to have time to talk about it, but it's just unfortunate.
And Carvajal from Real Madrid, that just a few minutes after, got subbed off as well for injuries, but it looked like an Achilles for Carvajal. And Carvajal's got a bad, bad history of injuries in the Champions League final 2 years ago, 2016, in the final of the Champions League. He got injured and missed the Euro 2016 with Spain because of that injury.
His reaction on the pitch where he was sobbing, your heart broke there too. Where I was, it's 85% Liverpool, and it was immediately following the injury. They thought he dove. Come on, people. Look at the reaction here.
He's crying, man. He's like realizing that he couldn't walk. He was carried off. Well, he was held off the pitch. He was trying to walk, but it was only on one foot. You can tell it must have been an Achilles, because he kind of knew right away. And once you had an injury before, when it happens again, you kind of know, right? You've experienced it. You've experienced the looseness of the tendon in the back of your feet. And yeah, this is terrible news for Spain, for Carvajal. We'll see. By the way, Mo Salah, as of today, is about 3 weeks on the sideline. So he might miss one game in the World Cup. He might miss the first game of Egypt almost for sure. But come on, he's going to go to Russia. He's going to be on the bench. And he might play the second and third game if need be.
He has a tactical purpose by just being on the roster, because you have to prepare for him then. You have to think about him, right? So even if they know he's out for the entire group stage, they're going to take him in case they get through, obviously, and also just as a distraction, because they will never be clear about this. Like, let's be honest. We're never going to know exactly in 3 weeks. How long? When's the World Cup start, coincidentally, right? That's why you're hearing this. So, you know, grain of salt when you're hearing injury reports and then move in. They're going to try and make it just any sport does this. They're going to try and hide a little bit exactly what his status is, because they want teams to have to prepare for and even make lineups based on the fact that he might be in there. So that's certainly something that will happen there. It's sad, because Egypt was setting up to be such an interesting story in this World Cup because of his abilities. At least it's a shoulder. So if you can manage the pain, he can play. Although it does affect your running, it does affect your quickness. At that level, you're talking about fine lines, right? So at that level, you know, having a little bit of less mobility up top is going to actually affect your ability. But it would be far worse if it was a lower body injury, is what I'm getting at. If it was a lower body injury of that status, he's done.
And three weeks, is it like enough to be able to put like tape on a separated shoulder in a way that it might prevent more trouble? So if you get it, 3 weeks, don't like immobilize the shoulder, don't move the shoulder, the arm, anything for 3 weeks. You try to make him not fly too much, even though he was in Ukraine. He's going to have to fly back to Liverpool and company and then go to Egypt and a training camp, whatever. But if you are careful with the travel, you immobilize the shoulder. You do not make him play anything. You make sure that you put a lot of ice, that you actually take care of it. 3 weeks is enough that you might be able to get something out of him and be able to get him comfortable enough where he can run and he can play and it won't be too affecting of his game.
Yeah. Well, and this spins into, I think, maybe the final place that we can look at for this guy. I probably talk an hour about this game, but we'll cut it off after this. What's this going to mean for Liverpool next year? And I think this is Jurgen Klopp's biggest challenge of his career is coming right now, because that is an absolute devastating loss that they suffered, particularly the way they suffered, and particularly the fact that it was two keeping errors that are the difference. That's long been considered an area that Liverpool needed to improve. It's long been an area that Jurgen Klopp has not prioritized.
Mignolet, exactly. Did you see the image of Klopp like this, looking at both keepers like, why are you both shite? Why are you both shite? I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I don't think there's any doubt there'll be a keeping change at Liverpool. He can't, like, no. You just can't. You got it for his. He wouldn't. Who would want to go back to that? He can apologize all he wants, but it's, no one's gonna ever trust him again.
Call Pepe right now. Call Pepe. Hey, Napoli. You remember you have a keeper we used to love. His flag is still flying at Anfield. Pepe, come back.
Yeah, something like that. But it is gonna be a major challenge, and also just psychological, the letdown of that, because you know Real Madrid loses that game to Liverpool. It's historic. Liverpool has a great moment. Real Madrid goes, well, they lick their wounds for 10 minutes and go, okay, well, we'll be back again. Liverpool, it's not quite as cut and dry. Obviously, Atleti did it, and that was a devastating loss for them, and they got back to another final. But you know the way they play is a little bit different. I'm not, especially you look at Salah and the injury there too is. If he he's going to force himself into the World Cup as if he can, right? And that in turn could make his injury worse. It will be the segue a bit into what we're going to talk about in the next segment. It'll be the Jozy Altidore effect, in that Jozy Altidore forced himself to play in the CCL final, and that has put TFC's season in jeopardy. So that's, you know, kind of the same thing. If he forces himself into a World Cup, is that going to put Liverpool's start of 2018-19 into jeopardy? And there's a lot of parity at the top of the Premier League right now. And if you drop some points early on, just ask Arsenal how having slow starts to the season ended up affecting their season, right? And they're both on the outside looking in now, right? So that's something that Liverpool's got to be aware of. And as I said, it's going to be Klopp's biggest challenge. I guess maybe the one advantage is that injury might have kept him at Liverpool a little longer, because I think that the big clubs would have been coming calling otherwise. Now, if there's some doubts there, maybe he gets another year out of him. And the way that they play, they need a guy that can pot the goals at the level that he did. Yeah. Do you think about the last few times Liverpool have had highly successful seasons? They've had, you know, Suarez and now this up top. So big challenges ahead for Liverpool. But they had a great Champions League run for sure. And a pretty decent season as well. So, you know, if you're a Liverpool fan out there, it's not going to be – I'm not going to soothe you by saying this, but there's a lot to take from this season and, you know, a lot to worry about moving forward. But if you can enjoy it, you just – you know, you had a goal in the Champions League final. That was tied for a few minutes there before Bale decided to ruin your day. But,
One thing we didn't talk about is the dropping of a bombshell, dropping of the mic by Cristiano Ronaldo after the game. Cristiano Ronaldo mentioning to be in sports after the game. Yes, it was very fun to play for Real Madrid for years. In the next few weeks, there'll be announcements, and I'll be talking about my future. But for now, it was really fun to say that I've played for Madrid. And then after the game, in the mixed zone, he was... confirming his statement, saying, look, maybe I shouldn't have said this. Maybe I should have waited. Maybe it wasn't the best time. But, there'll be talks about my future, and the decision will be taken in the next few weeks. Was this Cristiano Ronaldo turning every headline to make sure they're talking about him and not Madrid? Or is it true? Could Cristiano Ronaldo be on his way out of Real Madrid?
Shock move to Barca.
Never gonna happen.
He's been long. He does. I hope not for multiple reasons. But there's been long a fever dream that he'll go back to United. That is probably one of the few clubs in the world that makes sense because of his past history there. But do you really want one of the most gifted offensive players in history playing under Mourinho right now? But maybe he'll change his stripes if he has Ronaldo back. We'll see.
Here's my idea. Here's my scenario. What's been the rumor with Neymar? Where is it saying Neymar's going to go? But if Neymar goes there, you kind of need to get rid of one player. And PSG wants to win the Champions League. They're willing to put billions of dollars in a row to make sure they get next year's Champions League. If we put straight up swap Neymar for Ronaldo and a bit of exchange of money, that could be what's going on this summer.
Let's just do a quick little math here. There are maybe seven clubs in the world that can afford him. Maybe. And seven? Even include United in that, even though I don't think normally they'd be part of this, that's the type of level that we're talking about. But United, Barcelona, which is off the table, you've got Bayern could afford him probably, PSG obviously could afford him, City could afford him, who else? Chelsea maybe? Yeah, Chelsea could probably afford him, but I don't think that they're going to – even Chelsea doesn't spend at that level. So, yeah, there's not a lot of options. PSG makes – it's either PSG or United, or he's back to Real Madrid. There's, you know, there's my prediction.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Canadian review in about 30 seconds, not even.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sports podcasting network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on every podcatcher out there, or just look for the Sports Podcasting Network or on our website, sportspodcastingnetwork.com. $2 a month gives you access, exclusive access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, a Canadian soccer and Canadian soccer only podcast, of course, focused on the Canadian Premier League and Canadian soccer stories as a whole. Latest edition of the show, an interview with Steven Sandor and a discussion about Halifax and its Wanderers, which were announced on Friday, are now the first ever professional team in the first league in the Maritimes and in Halifax, and it'll be a fun time at the Wanderers ground. But now, being back with the Canadian review, it was not a fun time at BMO Field on Friday night.
Yeah, it was a strange game. And if you want to listen to my initial sober second thoughts, there is a show out that I produced immediately following that game. So they were, well, they were sober for the record, but they weren't like long afterthoughts. But it was a very pretty angry and frustrated stadium. And I think a lot of the reaction that has followed in the days since has been, it's been painted by that frustration more than actual analysis of what's happening. Now, it's unfortunate that it becomes very difficult to have a sort of reflective view of the loss, this loss and the Seattle loss. They had three straight home games and they lost two of them. Well, then they throw the New England game in there as well. So they've lost three of the last four, right? So it's a little difficult to like be reflective on that because the hole is so big right now. And you start to do the math and you start to look at the teams at the top of the East and you go, you know what? Maybe it's not snap your fingers and make the playoffs now. I don't think that that's off the table because once you get below five in the East, those top five are going to be hard to catch. But that sixth place is still up for grabs. But then you're talking about going into the playoffs as the number six seed. You're going to have to win that road game off of the hop with less than a week's rest. I suspect that, you know, CFC, if they were to turn it around and do something like that, would be a pretty terrifying sixth seed for the third seed. But nonetheless, it would be not something ideal for either side involved in that game. And they had – do I have the stats in front of me? I do have the stats right here by happenstance. So let me just have a quick look at them. 23 shots on target, or 23 shots towards goal, which is generally what you do. Nine of them were on target. You have 13 of those shots. 13 of the 23 shots were from inside the box. Those are quality chances. There were – Gonzalez made three or four – point-blank saves, including the penalty. We'll probably talk about the penalty in a minute. But
this was the best performance of a goalkeeper I've seen in a long time. It reminded me of Andre Blake last year for Philadelphia early in the season. Like, he literally stole the game for Dallas. Stopped, like, four goals point-blank, no problem.
Yeah, but the points are gone. What do I say all the time on this show? And we should get T-shirts made up that say this.
You can points on the board or points on the pocket.
Yeah, and points off the board are points out of the pocket is the opposite of that, and that is TFC's problem right now. If you had gotten a few more points early on in the season, you can throw your hands up and go, Gonzalez stole the game, what are you going to do, and move on to the next one. Now it's Gonzalez stole the game, oh my God, what are you going to do? It's a difference, and that tone is the difference in TFC's season right now. If you listen to the post-game show that I produced, I asked Greg Vanney about about the break, because I think that we've been saying on the show for a while, and I wanted to get his thoughts on it. And he admits that, yeah, the break's going to be needed because they need to get healthy. That is the key to TFC season right now, because I do think that as well as Gonzalez played, Kevin, if you put a healthy Jozy Altidore into that mix on Friday, they find a goal, at least a goal, right? Because he's just going to open up that much more space. And I love Jordan Hamilton. I love Jay Chapman. I love these offensive guys, these young guys that are coming in, and I think they have great histories and great futures, I should say. There's a lot of people out there that want to burn the whole place down. And, you know, I got tweets about Jordan Hamilton being a Canadian Premier League draft pick next year. No, they're not doing that. That's not where he's at. But he's not also Jozy Altidore yet either, right? So they just need to get healthy. But they need to get a lot more points in the pocket. Otherwise, we're going to be touch and go. And I think we are going to be touch and go. You know, think about 7 of the next 9 are on the road. I'll let you jump in after this. But 2nd of the last 9 of the next 9 are on the road. I was talking to Kurt Larson before the game in the press box for about 20, 30 minutes. And he said to me, he said to me off the top, he thinks 6th place is where they need to, what they should be looking at right now. And that's their best chance scenario. For the record, he thinks they will finish 6th. But he said to me, 7 of the 9, do you really think they're going to come back in a playoff spot after 7 of the 9 on the road? Really? The way they're playing right now in terms of the injuries and that, they're not going to be healthy for a lot of them. And I don't know. And if they do come back in a playoff spot after 7 of 9 on the road, then they're fine. But, well, they, I don't know, Kevin.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, let's move. We'll see if they do, but it's, you're right.
Well, quickly, before we do move on, I do want to talk about the penalties a bit and get your thoughts from an outside perspective
of
why
TFC
struggles so much in the penalty shootout.
Because he telegraphs where he's going to shoot it as soon as he steps up. Like, he's literally behind the ball. He's placing himself, and he's looking exactly where he's going to shoot it. And he doesn't look anywhere else at that point. Jesse Gonzalez sees that, and it's not just the look. It's Giovinco's entire body, the two hips, the planting foot is directing exactly where the ball is going. Like, he's not even trying to hide it. He's trying to say, you know what, Jesse Gonzalez, I'm going to send the ball there, and you're trying to stop it. I'm going to just make it really hard for you. Oh, wait, I missed my shot, and you saved it easily. Yeah, terrible keeper. Terrible penalty taken. And Greg Vanney mentioned after the game, like, I used to kick goal penalties for LA Galaxy. A lot of people that were better than me. But when it was time, I was more clutch. That was a bit of the gist of it. It's about time Toronto finds its clutch penalty takers because it's not Giovinco.
Well, it's in their head a bit, I think, too. I said that on the show, that I think it's psychological at this point. I, like many people, favor Vasquez as a designated penalty taker, but this is the other thing Vanny said, is that he prefers the players to work it out on the pitch. And if players are working on the pitch, Giovinco is going to keep taking them because that's just the type of player he is. And that benefits him, you know, outside of this one area for sure, because that sort of desire to always be the man is something that all great strikers have. But this is an area I'm going to question Greg Vanney. If I'm Greg Vanney, I'm looking at his Spanish midfielder, who is probably the most clutch guy they have out there, and saying, either you or Jozy, pin the little guy down. That's what I'm saying. All right.
You take him and you bring him back. And he's like, no, you're not taking this one, Gio.
I'm okay with Jozy. Yeah, Vasquez, Jozy. Between the two, I think those are got to be who you put in there. Yeah,
don't ask Bradley.
No.
We've seen how that happened. No.
If they're in the MLS Cup final or a playoff game that's going to penalties, like, sub Bradley out before the shootout. Just get him out. So there's no.
Okay, Bradley, go get off. You're subbed off. All right. Let's talk
about. I'd rather have Jay Chapman take the penalty than Michael Bradley. I'd rather have
Bono.
I'd rather have Hofer take the penalty than Michael Bradley.
Put Bono there. Never mind Bradley. All right. Let's talk about Vancouver. 3 straight weeks of battling hard for the draw. It wasn't 2-2 this time, but it was 3-3. And for the 3rd straight week, Vancouver battles hard late in the game to get a point, to salvage a point off a game where they were trailing. Yeah, 3 times in a row. I guess I'm expecting now Vancouver to come back and score a late goal, a late equalizer. I guess the Goonies moved to Canada.
The difference is the Goonies were getting 3 points with those late goals instead of 1 point with those late goals. Are the Whitecaps trying to be, you know, like go for that infamous 34 game unbeaten streak, miss the playoffs with 34 points kind of season? Is that what they want here?
That could be hilarious, but yeah, three goals. Like, look at the last three games for the Whitecaps. They scored seven goals. They conceded seven goals. But they scored seven goals, and yeah. I don't know. I saw the game a bit from
full glass half empty. Yeah, no, they got to get the defense straightened out. They figured the four, like, maybe this is the problem, and maybe therein lies in the issue you're talking about here, is that they were struggling getting anything going forward. So clearly they made some adjustments to get more offense in their games. But what has happened is that it's like a you open up one tap, the other tap closes, right? Like that's what's happening or something. They've got to get some balance in this. It's this team that they're either a terrible forward or terrible at the back. There's no happy medium here.
Yeah, speaking of no happy mediums. All right, let's move to Montreal and let's move to another defeat. 8 out of 11, a defeat out of 11 games. 7 of the last 8 games were lost by the Montreal Impact. And yeah, a lot of people are blaming the coach. A lot of people are blaming the owner. A lot of people are blaming the deciders who signed contracts, who signed the bad contracts, who signed like $800,000 for Mathieu Mancos, who can barely play a game. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting, what is it now? May 28th? Yeah, it's going to be a long way till November.
All right, Impact fans don't like it when I constantly compare them to TFC 2014 or 2013.
The 2013 TFC easily. Maybe not the worst team in the league type of, maybe not the worst team in the world conversation, but just the year after.
Yeah, I'll do another. It's another Toronto sports comparison, but one that's not TFC related, a different sport. I'll compare them to the current Toronto Blue Jays, in the sense that they've got some great players still. Even a player that at some point was considered amongst the best in the league. But they have a lot of big, bad contracts that are on the wrong side of their career that they need to get rid of before they can truly strip it down and start again. And that's what needs to happen. It's clearly what needs to happen for the Blue Jays. But this isn't a baseball podcast. On the Impact side of things, you don't have to strip it down to the same level as you would in a sport like baseball, but you do have to get rid of some of those bad contracts so you can replace them and move forward. So I think the summer window is going to be more important to the Impact than the stretch drive to try and, you know, claim a sixth place. Because if they get a sixth place out of this season and get a playoff game, then I think that that's great. And it's fun, and it's good for the fans to have that opportunity, but it's not really any different in terms of the long-term prospects of what this team is. They're not going to win the MLS Cup this year, right?
No, and like, you know what? It might be even better if they don't make the playoff. If you're not going to get relegated. It doesn't matter. Yes, Joey Saputo's going to lose money. He's not going to be happy that they're not going to be a playoff game in Montreal, and the fans are not going to be happy that, we're not going to win. But you know what? It's time we're being honest with ourselves. Did we ever think Montreal was going to win the league this year? Did we ever think Montreal was going to be a playoff favorite? Did we ever think Montreal was going to win the Golden Boot with Piatti? And then, no. Like, where did these expectations come from? It was always going to be a discovery year for Montreal. And guess what? They're discovering a whole lot. They're discovering a whole lot of things they need to change. And they need time. You can't change all this in a second. Contracts cannot be bought off and can't change half the team in the summer window. So they're discovering what to do now. And that's the other part of the discovery year. What to do next. We're discovering it together.
And look, you do get the 2-game tie with the Whitecaps, with the potential to go on to likely TFC for another 2 games to play for Voyageurs Cup. That is something to look forward to, something to build towards. And it seems kind of silly to build towards a 4-game tournament. And have that sort of center your season around it. But I almost think for the Impact, that would be a sensible thing to do, because it's going to come at a time when you can make some adjustments and you can look at that roster and say, okay, well, that's maybe, you know, let's intensify and rotate so that we prioritize getting to this, so that we have something to play for. That gives the crowd a little something, your hardcore fans something as well. And if you win it, then you get that little extra boost of so a little extra TAM, a little extra GAM, in the offseason to build even further. So I think that the Voyageurs Cup in many ways is vital for the Impact to take seriously. And with TFC struggles and the Whitecaps looking kind of right now, Why the hell not? That's, to me, as silly as it sounds, what the Impact should be focusing on is that's win the Voyageurs Cup. Then we get to play in the CCL. That's going to give us more resources to build because we need that. We know what we need to build. So, and it also is a nice thing. If you get a piece of silverware, that's going to buy some time and buy some goodwill.
Yeah, it buys goodwill, like you mentioned. It buys telephone, open lines in the radio stations. It buys a little bit of calm there. And you know what? We've seen it happen before, 2014, 2015. Maybe 2018 is the new 2014. Who knows? And maybe the Impact will go on a run in the CONCACAF Champions League next year. All right, that will wrap it up for today. I don't know what else I could say about the Montreal 2-0 loss against Minnesota. It was Piatti's playing selfish. Piatti's not passing the ball. Something's happening. Something happened. Is it the comments of Joey Saputo Monday after the game? Is it that? I don't know. There's something going on with Piatti, and it's been 4 or 5 games now easily just looking at his output and record for Montreal. Who says it's only bad things? There's a great record for Montreal. They haven't scored in over 380 minutes. That's a club record.
All right, only about another 500 to go to catch TFC's league record there. So that would be something to try and avoid. Kevin, I'm going to leave here. I'm going to go vote today in the Ontario elections. So if you're an Ontario listener, you have the early polls. Go out there and make sure you exercise your franchise in the next week or so, or on election day on June 7th, regardless of what party you choose. That's not what that's about, but that's what I'm going to do this afternoon. And then I'm going to watch a hockey game tonight. And hopefully I don't die from stress.
Hopefully. Can't guarantee anything. You know what happens when Ovechkin plays in the playoffs and the Capitals, right? There's someone's going to choke at some point. We'll see. We'll see tonight. This is game one of the Stanley Cup Finals. But this is a soccer show, and as always, you can follow Dwayne on Twitter at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Laramie. Thanks to all our Patreons. You can give us a support financially at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. A pledge of $2 a month and over will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, and soon you will have advertisement on the network on shows like this one on Soccer Today, our flagship shows. We're just working on how to make it work, but there's going to be ads before and after every show. But there's going to be an option for you to have your shows ad-free as well. And we'll have all the detail on patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. We're figuring out the price point, but there will be a price point per month. You give and you have no more ads for all the podcasts that you love. And as always, until next time, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie, and have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.